we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
Welcome, our wonderful, wonderful audience. Ginger and I are in good form.
Yes, hi, folks.
I don't know why people always ask us how our health is.
Maybe, well, that's because...
Maybe because of our age.
I think it's because we had a very frightening experience last year and people were concerned from that time.
And we have lots of enemies, but it's a tiny fraction of all the people who
love us.
And we love them back.
That's right.
It's a wonderful, wonderful audience.
That's right.
Well, I think today is going to be a specially enjoyable show. And by the way, we're on America Out Loud.
The Pulse.
America Out Loud.
Along with, I think it's five other prestigious physicians who do the four other weekdays. We come on America Out Loud Pulse on Thursdays at 5 p.m. on AmericaOutLoud.news.
Yeah, it's
right.
And it appears on just about every kind of platform there is for.
It goes up over the following weekend from that Thursday. It goes out to podcast. You have to search for the Pulse in the pod or America Out Loud Pulse. In podcasts to find the broadcasts.
And Ginger is doing wonderful writing on our Substack, which I just Googled Peter and Ginger Bregan Substack. But where you go to Substack and you'll find Peter and Ginger Substack doing really great work on it. And our Substack is now at about 80,000.
Oh my gosh.
It is 80,000.
No, it's not.
60?
It's just below 60. Okay. It's 56,000.
It will be at 80,000 soon at the way you're writing.
Well, thank you, honey.
I am sure of that.
And thank
you. We're just getting a lot of people enjoying that.
People are really appreciating our pieces. And, you know, your pieces come up there too. You just did a piece on Luvox and how dangerous it is. Especially since people, some have been recommending it for COVID symptoms, which is crazy. And anyone who has questions.
Only if you want to make somebody psychotic who's on.
Yes.
Has COVID already.
And so anyone who has questions about Luvox can go to our Substack and read Dr. Bregan's most recent article about Luvox.
And a lot of our stuff, I haven't thought about talking about this, but a lot of our stuff now is getting 30,000 views and stuff like that.
Yeah, 30 to 50,000 views. Yeah.
This is all in a way a recovery from when, as soon as I did a video in November 2021 announcing our book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators, within 45 minutes, YouTube took us down forever. No notice, just down. No explanation, just down, because I think they could see this book was going to have an impact. And at that point, we had about 45,000 people.
Subscribers on YouTube.
All of whom we lost. And so this is kind of the rebuilding from that several years ago. But anyway, Sherry Zaslavsky, Sherry, C-H-E-R-I.
Sherry's our guest today.
And she's got a Substack, Sherry Z's Truth to Be Told, with an exclamation point. And we first heard about her when she did something remarkable, a great critique of Robert Malone. We noticed those. We have almost nothing to do with them, and there are many of them, but this was a really good one a few months ago on her Substack. Sherry is a writer. She's a freelance editor. She's a private educator, a teacher, and writer. She's a writing coach for high school students in California. Do you want to say what city you're in California?
I'm in Silicon Valley. Let's leave it at that.
Silicon Valley. Her work appears in News with the Views.
The Valley of the Beast.
Yes.
Renew America, Lou Rockwell, American Thinker, Canada Free Press, WIN, WND, the Post and Mail, and more. And she's a delightful person to look at, to chat with on the phone, to see on video. And today she's going to talk about the takedown of America and other things, which is the most important topic in the world today. And I'll leave it to you to explain that in your own words. We've been trying to explain that for a long time, too. So welcome, Sherry.
Thank you so much. It's an honor and a joy to be here with you both.
It's really a joy to meet you, Sherry. We had the pleasure of speaking to you at some length several months ago, and it's just great to connect.
For me too, Ginger. Thank you so much. So I've been thinking a lot about the takedown of America, which is, I think, so vitally important for us, even though it's a piece of a larger puzzle. And my belief is that America is the jewel in the crown, and that there's no way that what Peter and Ginger call the global predators could possibly enact their one world government without taking down America. And we think of America in World War II rising to the occasion and fighting against Hitler and winning. And so they couldn't afford to let America stand. So how is it that this greatest, freest, most prosperous country ever can be taken down? How could that happen? And I want to make an analogy, but first, there's a quote from a Hemingway novel, The Sun Also Rises, where a character named Mike Campbell is asked, I think he's the one who's asked, how did you go bankrupt? And he says, two ways, gradually and then suddenly. And I think that's what we're seeing in America. It's been gradual over many decades. And I fear that we've moved into the suddenly part of that equation. And a metaphor that recently occurred to me is one of the immune system. So if we think about America as a living entity, as almost as a personification of America, what gave America that strong, healthy immune system that enabled it to function and prosper for so long? And I would say that that is our foundation on biblical morality. And in the Declaration of Independence, we have Thomas Jefferson assuring us that our rights come from our Creator. And rights can only come from one of two places: from God, so that's our birthright, or from government. And this was the genius and the cornerstone of American exceptionalism. When we say, okay, our rights come from God, nobody can take them away from us. And when we look at the Bill of Rights, I think there are many people who misunderstand the Bill of Rights and think that these are privileges that the government is granting to us, which is why there was a big argument about the founders had whether to include a Bill of Rights. I guess we're fortunate that they decided to go ahead and do it. But if you notice, the Bill of Rights will say things, for example, like in the Second Amendment, these rights to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So where did the rights come from? That's birthright. So we're looking at birthright. And so how could this strong, biblically based immune system be that was going to ward off any sort of attacks? How could the predator class get in there? And I'm going to compare that to COVID and the inoculations. So we could go back to 1913 with the founding of the Federal Reserve and say, okay, they just got control of money. They were able to do a lot. What did they do with that? they pumped up the economy and people were investing like crazy in the stock market. We have the roaring 20s. Everybody's having a great time. And then they pull the plug in 1929 and they cause a stock market crash and the Great Depression ensues. Well, why did they do that? If this is done, as I believe many people believe it was done intentionally, why? And I would argue that they did it at least in part so they could inoculate the body politic with socialism. And that's exactly what happened in the 1930s with FDR, Social Security, et cetera, lots of government programs, lots of communists in his administration, as I later found out. So we see this wearing away of the American immune system, if we can call it that. And when America is weakened enough, then they can pretty much do as they please with our nation. And I think that's where we are. There are many, many inflection points. And we can see in the 1950s, for example, the tax-exempt foundations were being examined finally. And this is how the Rockefellers built such incredible wealth and power, and other, the Carnegies, et cetera. And Norman Jodd, working in the Reese committee, discovered that the whole point of the tax-exempt foundations was to make America indistinguishable from the Soviet Union. So they already were planning to kind of turn America into a communist state. And this was after the war in the 50s. Then we have, of course, the assassination of Kennedy in 1963. And one after the other, almost every decade there was some element of eroding our nation's patriotic foundational liberty, our healthy immune system, and bringing America to her knees, which is, I think we can agree, is where we are now. So I'll pause a moment because I'm sure you have some thoughts.
Well, first, that was brilliant. That was really brilliant. One of the most straightforward, easily understandable explanations of all this. And as you said, there are many other themes that run along with this and beside this. The theme I want to stay just with your theme and say that people must be really wondering, why are the billionaires and the multimillionaires back then, before we had billionaires, why are they supporting the Roosevelt administration's move toward socialism and communism? Well, they weren't just supporting it in the U.S. In fact, they have supported every totalitarian regime ever thought of on Earth, as far as I could tell. Some of the bankers, not huge numbers, but well-documented numbers of bankers, were supporting Hitler's rise to power. During the Third Reich, when Hitler was basically isolated from much of the Western world, and hence its money and support, the central bank of central banks, you mentioned the Fed. The Fed is a central bank. And these are banks all around the world, which are mostly simply under the control of private powers, mm-hmm. in almost all of them, not in Great Britain, I think, and definitely not in China, communist China. So these banks are under the control of billionaires, ostensibly to stabilize the money and make the world a safer place, but actually to take over all the nations of the world with the banking network. And the banks supported, U.S. banks, the rise of Mao in China. They have been in there doing dirty work. all along. So, oh, and also the Bolsheviks, our banks, and I think the Rockefellers even, might not be good on my memory on that, supported the Bolshevik Revolution. So what's going on? The simple fact is that you can make billions more and have more ability to be a predator if you're working through an authoritarian government than working through a real constitutional democracy, which has safeguards against it, which has a judicial system, which has agencies, most of which quickly they'll turn over to the billionaires. It's supposed to have an autonomous president and so on. But when you are dealing with, say, modern China, even, if you're a billionaire like Bill Gates, who, by the way, has two huge awards, honorific awards from Communist China, that's in our book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators, if you're working with a communist regime, you can just come up with all kinds of gimmicks you want. You want to have an NFL, you want to have a basketball team thing there, you want to sell shoes, you want to make virulent pathogens to use against the countries. Well, we'll support that too. We'll just get in there and empower you because you empower us. And we have much more of a free-swinging, rollicking way to become billionaires and multi-billionaires. And this is what they have done. All the top companies want to be in China. All the tech companies, the film companies. I mean, there's nothing that doesn't want to be in China. The Pope sold out the Catholic Church by giving the power to the communists to appoint his Catholic bishops. I mean, totally sold them out. Look on your face, you might be Catholic.
Oh, no, I'm Jewish.
You're Jewish. you're a kinswoman. I was going to ask you before the show, but I didn't. But Jews and Catholics, they look alike often, and we are alike often. I've even been told by dear Catholic friends that I'm a Catholic, even though I don't know it. So that's what's going on. This is a purposeful takeover of the world by the billionaires working with authoritarian governments, because that's how they can do it. I think, and I'll finish with this, they're making a huge mistake in thinking that when the world is completely overtaken by the combination of the Western emperors and the Eastern emperors, the Western Empire and the Eastern Empire, it's going to be the Chinese communists who are ultimately the most ruthless, have the biggest army, have the advanced technology. They're just going to wipe out the Western billionaires. There's only 20 seconds left.
We're going to take a break.
We'll just take a break and we'll come back to Sherry Zaslowski. Maybe she'll make a few comments on what I just said and just move on with her own thoughts.
Great.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit HealRight.com/outloud or AmericaOutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
58 million people suffer from joint aches and stiffness in the U.S. every day. Ignoring chronic joint discomfort can affect mobility and your quality of life. Advanced nutrition company, Healthy Cell, created joint health and mobility to support connective tissue, joint lubrication, and reduce joint irritation with curcumin, omega-3, chondroitin, glucosamine, and hyaluronic acid for joint comfort and flexible range of motion. And Healthy Cell's not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with clinically proven ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients. You would need to take 11 pills to get the same amount of nutrients in each gel pack. And these great tasting gels come in a small packet.
tear off the top, shoot it down, or mix it in water. It's 100% drug-free joint support. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. HealthyCell.com, code OUTLOUD for 25% off.
Who's got time for a nasal invasion messing up your lifestyle? Crush those nasties before they become a problem. For a limited time, when you add the new Cofix RX throat spray to your order with the coupon code OUTLOUD, you'll receive 20% off the entire purchase. Go to AmericaOutLoud.shop. That's AmericaOutLoud.shop and use coupon code OUTLOUD.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
And we're back. Before we go back to Sherry, I wanted to comment on one thing that has occurred to me. I've been following loosely the information that's been coming out about the Biden family and their relationships in the Ukraine and with communist China. And part of what has come out of that, or what is emerging, and unfortunately I don't have details, but I think that this is a good example, is that there's a lot of intelligence work that's being done and promoted through those connections. And I think that's universal to any of these countries that bring in the billionaires. They bring in the billionaires, and the billionaires, in turn, are very much influenced by the intelligence companies like the CIA and the Department of Defense and BARDA, DARPA, in whatever way the nonprofits or the billionaires may profit from those relationships. So for instance, Twitter was making a lot of money hiring in their social editors, who were actually their social censors. And when Musk came in and cleaned house and took over the company, he said to Tucker Carlson, he fired 80% of the staff, 80%. And yet his newly branded company, which was Twitter and now is X, X operates as it used to. It's still not perfect, but it has done a lot of cleaning house. And that 80% that was fired were the social editors, the social critic editors who were banning and blocking and shadow banning and disrupting and putting brakes on conservatives and critiques of the vaccine and whatever else they thought was wrong to say. And that all ties in with these connections of the billionaires and the nonprofits and totalitarian governments.
One of the things that ties it together quickly is this private-public partnership concept, yes, because that's what you just described.
Oh.
You can start the government working with industry. Sometimes industry dominates, sometimes the government dominates.
And they work with the nonprofits too, and the NGOs, yes, those that are supposedly good-hearted and just there to do good, yes, works. And as we've discovered, that's just like a freeway, yeah, to get in and do manipulative things.
Right, and sometimes it moves more toward fascism, where the corporations have more power, moves toward communism, where the government has more power, the party, really, the Communist Party has more power. And when it evolves, it's just going to be, again, one more totalitarian takeover, as we've seen time and again since civilization. Only this time they got the ability to do the globe.
Right.
Let's go back to you've really inspired us to talk back to Sherry Zaslavsky.
Good. So just listening to what the two of you were saying about this totalitarian impulse and so forth, and the public-private partnerships, which that's what Mussolini did, right? And that's an almost, yes, classic definition of fascism. And what a lot of people don't realize because our language is so Orwellian anymore, that they think, well, fascism, that's on the right. Donald Trump is a fascist, that's on the right. And communism, that's on the left, but we actually like it, right? But actually, they're both on the left. And when you try to tell people that, a lot of people are very resistant to that truth. And I saw, when I accidentally red-pilled myself, which was in 2011, I was a lifelong Jewish liberal Democrat till 2011, when Obama was in office, and I discovered the internet, because I've always dragged my feet about technology, never been a big fan of it. I like actual physical books. In fact, I have one right here. I just wanted to not forget to show you. Oops, you have to see here.
Oh, it's our
book. COVID-19 and global predators. Look at all of the tabs.
It's all tagged up.
I watched a video that explained that if you really want to talk about power, it only makes sense to talk about power in terms of governmental power. And so the left of the spectrum is complete, total governmental power. And you put their dictatorships, monarchy, fascism, communism, they're all on the left. And if you want to look at the extreme right, you see anarchy. No government. Oh, there's your puppy.
There she is.
So on the extreme right, there's anarchy. And what our founders did so brilliantly is they found kind of golden mean about one third of the way to the left of anarchy, two thirds of the way to the right of absolutism. So they found a point where, you know, anarchy doesn't work either. Anarchy doesn't work. And something that I find a lot of people misunderstand about communism, you often hear people say, well, why would people want to try communism? It never works. And I wonder if you'll agree with me. I beg to differ. I say it always works. It always works. I give my students, my more advanced students, I give them a prompt about utopias and dystopias. And I ask them to discuss the relationship between a utopia and a dystopia, and to write about a literary work that they consider one of the other. And very, very few of them figure out what I want them to figure out, which is that they're one and the same. They're two sides of the one coin. And what people misunderstand about communism being a failure, well, they're thinking about the being, if we say animal farm, they're thinking about being one of the animals on the farm, not being one of the pigs. So communism, it works all the time. It's tyranny, and it serves the interests of the Politburo, etc. So that is their utopia. And I would argue that this is what the global predators, that's their vision, is that they want to own everything, have us own nothing. And that is their utopia. And almost by definition, that's going to be our dystopia. And something else I think is really interesting when we look at the left, especially we look at communism, what happens every time when there's a communist revolution, what happened in Russia, what happened Stalin's Russia, Mao's China, Castro's Cuba, there's massive starvation and death when they take over. And I'd like to hear your ideas about why. One idea I have is they intimidate and terrify everybody, and they have a smaller population to control. But maybe the two of you have ideas about that as well. Because it looks like that's where we're heading in America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Blue Book of Freedom. You've read them.
Yeah. First, I want to say that you just sit there and talk so quietly and brilliantly. Brilliantly. You help me broaden my thinking. And not being smug, I mean, that doesn't happen every day, like a slap in the face in a bad marriage.
Oh, God.
I have no idea.
I've never heard
I don't know where this goes on, but you're actually inspiring in clarity.
Oh, thank you.
I think that there's two ways to look at that inevitable result of misery. It's not just starvation, it's misery.
Yes.
And of all kinds. Part of it's intentional to, or at least it's an acceptable after effect of taking over and running things. You're no longer thinking about anybody's well-being. You're running things. That means your well-being. And that's why that happens to all people who take over other people's lives. I don't care if you're a jailer or if you're an aide on a ward or worse yet, a psychiatrist running the hospital or worse yet, the head of the American Psychiatric Association. The more power people get, and Lord Acton said this, he not only said that power corrupts, he said a powerful man is almost surely a bad man.
Oh,
they took that out. It's back in the same sentence. Nobody quotes that. So that's one part of it. But then there's another part, which is very, very different. And that is what makes for prosperity. And prosperity, and the studies that I did on this were mostly with libertarians, but not the crude ones, but really the brilliant ones, like Ludwig von Mises, who wrote a number of books, including a huge blue one that I actually read. I even met Ludwig von Mises when I was a libertarian, which I'm consider myself much more a freedom-oriented conservative now. But the idea is that no one knows what's best for society. No one with ultimate power can nonetheless control a society ultimately. It doesn't work like that. It takes lots of separate entities working toward their own self-interest to keep a society humming. And this is the basic principles of The Wealth of Nations by Adam Smith. It's the basic, even in some ways more brilliant rendition by von Mises, where he says it's the subjective human being who has to make decisions for their lives. They will do the best if they're free people. And so when you take away the freedom of the people you're ruling, you lose all your ability of innovation, of loud voices, of people stating what they want. Mm-hmm. Now, what comes with that, unfortunately, and with democracy, is a lot of crudity and inanity and shallowness. Sure, we get that in our society from early on. I'm sure it starts early enough. But it is a lot easier to protect freedom from fads and things like that than it is from the dictatorships. They always rob our freedom. That's what they are. So I think that's a partial explanation, trying to give you something I studied and thought about for a long time that led me from being a nice Jewish, thinking he was a liberal and progressive.
So you started out like me as a.
I grew up on Long Island in a Nouveau Riche community where the Jews were moving in from New York City and Brooklyn. My father, my mother, the only time I ever saw her cry was with the death of a best friend of hers and the death of Roosevelt. And somehow the Jews in America missed that Roosevelt was an anti-Semite who'd do anything not to stop the Holocaust or get labeled as a Jewish defender. He wouldn't even bomb the railroad tracks going into Auschwitz. His wife begged him. The Jews didn't know about this stuff. They didn't know that the New York Times with a Jewish head was soft-pedaling communism in order to get along, I guess, and because they all have these ideas. You know what they think? They think like adolescents. If I could rule the world, it would be a great place. So I want to vote for people like me, and we'll all rule the world. I mean, I think that's the naive version. But within it are the predators who are saying, okay.
We'll tell you anything, and then we'll rule the world our way.
You're the useful idiots. Come on along and put us in power.
And of course, Roosevelt's whole administration was just riddled with communists,
yes,
as Diana West has documented so brilliantly in her books.
Another friend of ours.
Yes.
An old friend.
Yes. Yes.
Who also attacked Malone without a word about it.
Yeah, that's right.
Some of us have a kind of inner radar.
Well, I think that's so. You have 3 minutes for a break, and then we continue with you.
My parents, my grandparents all idolized FDR also. And after I woke up and switched from being the liberal Democrat to being a constitutionalist Republican in search of a Tea Party group, that was pretty radical. I came across a book called The Roosevelt Myth by, I think his name is John Flynn. And it's amazing, and he lays it out. He was a contemporary of Roosevelt, and he lays out all the communists in the administration and all this, what's going on. But my question before the break is, okay, that was the 1940s. How come the Jews are still voting for the Democrats today?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
How come?
They've made a very good argument that we're the evil ones. Much of the entire success of the Democrats is convincing everybody that people from the Midwest, particularly also from the South, are evil, and the conservatives are violent and hateful people. They really developed this party line, taught it to the Jews, taught it to the African-American community. When I went to Harvard, there was only one even conservative that we knew of in the student body. And that's 1954 to 58.
Really?
And there were plenty of Jews there, but none who would stand up on conservative issues. I heard some decent conservative thinking from some of the older professors. When I went, professors taught big classes, big professors, well-known people, not now.
I've got one quick comment, and that is that there's the author Rummel, R-U-M-M-E-L, who's written several books, and he spent his entire life studying oppression, totalitarianism, and he documents really thoroughly how the more totalitarianism a government is, an entity is, the more death there is, the more death of its citizens. He's not looking at just the deaths that are happening within a war, but he looks at those too, but the deaths of the citizens. And I think of Russia in the early days.
Democide.
He coined it as democide.
Killing your own citizens.
Right. And one of his books is called Power Kills. I'm looking at the title right over there. And then there are others also. When I would suggest you go and look for R.J. Rummel and some of his books. They're amazing. And with that,
The Blue Book of Freedom.
The Blue Book of Freedom.
Is that what it is?
I think so.
During the quick break, I want to get another author. You really stimulated us to be thinking about this.
So we're going to take a quick break now.
Okay.
When God, through his grace and mercy, gave us free will of the people was to live freely. To that end, we fight for the liberty of all at a time when global tyranny threatens us as never before in mankind's history. This vision is manifest at AmericaOutloud.news, a site for all who cherish free will and freedom. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Millions of Americans are needlessly suffering from the long-haul effects of the toxic spike protein. Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company designed their spike support formula to counteract harmful spike protein from COVID-19 and vaccines so you can feel your best. Go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order.
They're starting again with Sherry Zaslavsky. It's just like it sounds, Zaslavski.
Why?
Thank you. Looking right at it, too. Substack, Sherry Z's with an apostrophe, truth be told, exclamation point. Sherry has a remarkable, she's a journalist and editor, she's a teacher, she has a remarkable ability to say things so that anyone could understand them. And they're often, what she says, gives me a better perspective about exactly the things I've been studying. So this has been just a lovely and inspiring session so far.
And we're in our third segment.
And I should, why don't you start a good conversation with Sherry, Ginger? I'm going to just sit back for about a minute.
Well, that's okay. I think I'd like Sherry just to share more of her thoughts with us.
So I want to now drill down, get a little closer in time to where we are now. And I'd like to talk about Obama. So there was an extremely important issue about Obama that never was really dealt with, and that is his citizenship.
Yeah.
People did talk about Hawaii. Was he born in Hawaii? He wasn't born in Hawaii. But if we go back to the Constitution, and this is the only special requirement for an office holder in the whole Constitution, is for the president and vice president and speaker of the house, people who could end up as the commander in chief, et cetera. So the founders thought this was very important. And the description that I like for what is a natural born citizen, it is, the analogy is with a three-legged stool. So one leg is the citizenship of the father, one is the citizenship of the mother, and the third is born on the land. And the Latin, jus soli, jus sanguinis, the blood and the soil. Why did they care about that? Because they want to be sure that the top executive doesn't have divided loyalties. So with Obama, even if he had been born in Hawaii, which is questionable, but let's say for the moment that he was, his father was a citizen of Kenya. His mother was a teenager who lived abroad and hadn't lived in the country long enough to confer citizenship on her son. So if he wasn't born in Hawaii, he has not a leg to stand on. So that three-legged stool collapses. Why does that matter? I think it matters very much because that's another inoculation against our founders, the biblical principles and the Constitution. So that's a little wedge in there, putting somebody in office who is in gross violation of the Constitution as the upholder of the Constitution. And not only that, if you think about it, so we're a democratic republic, and we have our free enterprise system that has led to great prosperity. Obama is arguably a Marxist. So we have somebody who's not constitutionally eligible, who's also a Marxist. And we're based on the Judeo-Christian tradition. We have somebody who is arguably a Muslim. And I won't get into the homosexuality part of the equation, but we know there are rumors and beyond rumors there. In fact, everything about this man has been shrouded in mystery, even his names. Is he Barry Sotero? Is he Barack Obama? Et cetera, et cetera. And Wayne Allen Root wrote about him. He went to school with him in Columbia, and he said he never saw him. And in fact, nobody ever saw him. So it's questionable that he even went there. Everything shrouded in mystery. And so this is a way that the globalists behind him are thumbing their nose at America, at our Constitution. And if we think about the what he has actually ended up doing to America, it's been just so divisive. So we have nothing but problems from Obama, including his apologizing to the Islamic republics and sabotaging Israel. And we see these things continuing now in Biden's administration. And we know that behind the scenes, Obama is giving instructions to Biden. A lot of us, myself included, call him O Biden. And let's pay attention here too, because we know that it's very clear. It was clear at the time that 2020 election was stolen. We saw it in real time, many of us. You could see on CNN, Trump's numbers would be going up, and then all of a sudden they would go down. How can addition turn into subtraction when you're adding votes? This is a logical impossibility. And now there's some wonderful documentaries, a new one that I just watched, very powerful, Let My People Go, by Dr. David Clements. Wonderful. And there's a short video, Fractal by Fractal. And these things prove definitively that the election was stolen. And I think that it was obvious anyway on November the 4th, 2020, that we all could see that it was stolen. So what do we have now? We have a usurper who is a lifelong crook and political hack as our president, in advanced senility, and the vice president, Calamity Harris, has, I got that from Joan Swirsky, great writer. Calamity Harris is also not a natural born citizen. So the point that I want to make now, she's not. Her parents were, her mother from India, her father, I think, from Haiti. Neither one was a citizen. So if we go by Vattel, Law of Nations, it's the three-legged stool. So no, she also, not to mention she's the DEI vice president, right? I mean, not even the Democrats want to run her. The point that I want to make, and I'd like to get your opinions on, is that as I see it, we're not just being taken down, or the attempt to take America down, but to humiliate us. And it seems as if this is almost coming from vengeance, from a hatred of America. I mean, there was no reason to put Obama in office. Plenty of Democrats or Rhino Republicans could have done the evil that Obama's done. No reason to put Calamity Harris in office, no reason why Biden. So this seems like just a gross humiliation of our once great nation. And I have a quote. Do I have time to read a quote?
Yes.
Naomi, let me see. I have a couple quotes I'd like to read. It's from Naomi Rogan, who lives in Israel. She's Israeli, but she was born in America. And she says this: the America of World War II, which declared war on enemies and sent its people to fight against Hitler with full intention and resolve, is no more. I don't know what it is now. It stands for nothing. Its people, as much as the Israeli people, have been betrayed, its borders breached, its populace under siege by lawlessness from within and without. its moral integrity ground into dust by new moral arbiters who see good in promoting racism and calling it equality, overseeing the decay of its educational institutions and calling it progress, perverting its legal system to advance political goals and justifying it as a means to an end. And she ends like this: "It is my hope that the flickering candle of American exceptionalism ushered in by the Constitution can still rally before it is snuffed out completely by those who hate her and wish to see her die." Naomi Rogan.
That's brilliant. I'd like to put that toward the end of our new book if you send us a link. You're really spot on. You're thinking so spot on. What were some of the other quotes you wanted to share at this point?
Well, so I'd like to read. How much time have we left?
We've got 7 minutes.
Okay. So Solzhenitsyn, I can read the shorter version or the longer.
Shorter.
The shorter. "If I were asked today to formulate as concisely as possible the main cause of the ruinous revolution that swallowed up some 60 million of our people, I could not put it more accurately than to repeat, quote, men have forgotten God. That's why all this has happened." And may I read a short poem that I wrote myself?
Oh, I'd love that, Sherry. Thank you.
It's called Saying Grace. Somebody else planted the wheat, sowed the spinach and the corn. Somebody else slopped the pigs, winnowed the grain, gathered the hen's eggs, tromping through the sheaves, paying attention. Somebody else slaughtered the cow, carved the flesh, wrapped it in cellophane for you to take home. Somebody else churned the butter, glazing your toast and scrambled eggs. And somebody else created all this. Let us then say grace at our tables for the many labors that brought us this food, and beyond them to the one whose name today we are taught not to mention, even in poems.
Oh my, that is so beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's so beautiful. It's so easy to forget those things as we rush through our daily lives.
Yes.
Well, again, I'm just enjoying what you're saying and how you're speaking about this. I imagine that your Substack is, which I have not read, is equally amazing, and I'm going to start looking at it.
Peter.
I think it'll enliven the writing I'm doing. The issue of hate that you brought up, it could become misleading. I think it is hate. It is hate. But that's not why it's destroying America. It's destroying America about what you said before. It's the jewel and the crown. They want to pluck the jewel and the crown. And more broadly, which you've also been saying, which is that America stands in the way. Mm-hmm. So America has to be leveled as both a shining city on the hill to inspire the world, but also as a fortress to fight back.
Mm-hmm.
And
right, and to stand in opposition
of
totalitarianism.
People don't think about it thoroughly enough that during World War II, when I was a child, America was fighting empires that wanted to take over the world.
Yes.
Hitler wanted Berlin to be the capital of the world. There's a great deal of writing about his aspirations to rule the world. The communist leaders all wanted to rule the world because that's communism. Communism is an impulse to rule the world. The Communist Manifesto was workers of the world unite, not the people of Hoboken or Denmark or some other place, but all the workers to unite so that they can take over. And Mao wanted to rule the world very, very clearly, and he was very worshipful of the, I think it's the Qin dynasty, but anyway, a dynasty that in about 230 took over all of China, and which was considered the first great totalitarian dynasty. And the Japanese imperial family and the people who took that over and guided it and so on, they wanted to rule the world. That's why they did that big strike, reaching halfway around the world or whatever, and attacking Hawaii and trying very early to cripple America on the way to ruling the world. Nowadays, the people who want to rule the world, some of them, like the Chinese communists, have a very long tradition in the big military. That's the Eastern group. The Western group are all the big business people, the billionaires, the people who are in politics, influencing the UN and the WHO, which is really kind of something that's going to be fought over between who right now runs it, Xi Jinping or Bill Gates and Klaus Schwab, who's going to run that thing in the West. And so this has always been there, this impulse, with or without hatred for people, this impulse to dominate them.
I'd like to mention also that the Western predators, as we identify them, the billionaires and the entities that are trying to create globalism run by this Western entity group, they aren't landmass connected. They aren't connected to... a geographical location like the United States or Europe, although many of them are centered in Europe. But there isn't a geographical weddedness to that Western group, in contrast with China, which is wedded to its own vast homeland. And I think that's important because they're shapeshifters. You know, they can bring up totalitarianism in what we consider one national entity. And if that gets pushed back, you may think, oh, great, that's been pushed back. It's going to pop up elsewhere, wherever they're able to find levers of influence and pressure that they can bring upon whatever administration in whatever government is vulnerable. They'll push those levels of influence and bring about totalitarianism both in that location and then use it to spread it further into others.
Yeah, one other thought about that even the heads of China are not really lovers of China. They all worship Mao, and the Chinese Communist Party says that Mao killed 100 million Chinese on the way to taking over.
Very good point.
Did Mao love China? Did he identify with the Chinese peasants he slaughtered, the Chinese landowners he slaughtered? Listen, this has been a wonderful conversation. You should write a book if you haven't already.
I'm spread so thin, but I definitely want to write a book.
Well, yeah. Talk to us about it. We've published a lot of books, written a lot of books, and so on.
And we'll put your contact information in our write-up of this interview.
So goodbye now to Sherry Zaslavsky. What a delightful, informative, inspiring, and eloquent time with you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.